I forget. Do we do a hook for these?
No, we don't.
Sweet.
Welcome to the Epic Podcast, your weekly dose of mental foreplay. I'm Matt.
I'm Jen.
I'm Austin.
I'm Christina.
I'm David.
There's a voice missing here, so I want to know, where in the world is Joni from the podcast?
She is in Costa Rica at a place called Solterra, and it is a retreat center that does ayahuasca ceremony retreat things. She's there for 2 weeks, and they have 1 week, 2 week, and 3 week kind of programs, and then they have some specialty programs with different known communicators during the winter. I guess there's some coming up in November, December. They're already sold out, but she's there for 2 weeks, and they do 4 ceremonies a week. And so she'll be doing 8 ayahuasca ceremonies over the next 2 weeks. Her first one is tonight. She should be traveling the cosmos as we speak. It is 9:15 on the Eastern Standard Time, and she's 2 hours behind, and they go from 6:30 to 1 p.m. So you're talking about potentially up to 6 hour, how do we say, spiritual experiences, also known as psychedelic experiences. So they last for up to 6 hours, but each person's a little bit different. And, you know, so she should be experiencing something. I'm not sure what to expect, but their communication is, they're encouraged to not communicate much during the week and kind of unplug from society, mm-hmm. unplug from work, unplug from friends, family, everything. So I'm getting snippets of information, but not much. And that's the point. So that is where Joni is.
That's wild. Well, I guess we will have to do mostly monthly without her this month.
Yes.
Well, that's the case. Let's keep it outside the borders here. Let's keep it outside the borders. And what's going on around the world? You may want to take a stab here.
The two people well, with the two
Nora just like, you do it, Jen.
No, you do it.
I can start. To be honest, I did not really research it that much at all.
This is going to be good. Super good.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Educate us.
Awesome.
Uneducated one.
apparently somebody or something attacked some Saudi Arabian oil fields, or a Saudi Arabian oil field. And the thing that kind of caught my eye, my intellect, whatever you call it, was the fact that they're saying that because of this attack, 5% of the oil production in the world is gone. And I was surprised that one oil field is that much of the production of oil in the world. And number two, why the heck were they not guarding it? Or what was going on here? What's going on here? If I remember correctly, it was like a drone attack. Like, I guess they just went in and shot it up, and here it went up in flames. And the U.S. and Saudi Arabia are blaming Iran, and Iran has turned themselves into a bit of a pain in the ass in
what
Gulf Coast. They have been taking tankers, seizing tankers and stuff, and they think that they're just this is just another one of their schemes or whatever. And so, yeah, you know, everybody's saying, okay, we're gonna go to war. Somebody equated that with Pearl Harbor, you know, equated burning up, attacking this oil field as a Pearl Harbor style attack. And so, stuff is getting kind of hairy there in the Middle East, and it's probably going to have a lot of an effect on us also, mainly in the gas prices and all that stuff.
It's interesting you bring that up.
10% according to this article.
10%? Holy cow. I mean, for goodness sakes, the Harry. That's crazy.
Well, I heard that Trump okayed like using some of our stuff if we need to.
Yeah, so the strategic oil reserves are already, you know, being tapped into as we speak. And on the bright side, we're a net energy exporter now. I don't know if everybody kind of knows that.
What does that mean, sir?
It's that we produce more than we consume. And so we don't necessarily have to have all of it coming in.
Wow.
Okay. That's interesting. Yeah. A little hope. How did that happen?
Well, I feel like so many people that I graduated with have made their way to oil fields one way or another, whether it's overseas or domestically. And you know, a lot of there was that rush, man, was it a decade ago, to get this stuff rolling, and then it's kind of going.
So it's all related to oil. It's not like some other kind of more environmentally friendly.
Well, oil is always going to like any news that's negative, it's going to spike the price. I mean, the first thing I heard about it was a friend on Twitter saying, go fill up your gas tank. I was like, crap, it's like 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, I was just thinking.
Did you notice any difference?
No, I haven't. No.
Okay, well.
I didn't see any.
Guess we're all fine then.
Right.
For today.
For today. The other interesting thing about the article I was reading was that Trump is saying that if there is any sort of involvement, if there is any war or anything like that, and the U.S. has to implement or use any of the resources that we have to attack Iran, that he's going to make Saudi Arabia pay for it.
I love how he's always going to make other countries pay for everything.
Well, the thing is, like, yeah, I don't know.
You tell
me. To me, it's just like, okay, yeah, I mean, you're right. But at the same time, in Mexico, the reason why he was wanting to make them pay for it was because they weren't enforcing their southern border. Uh-huh. And they were just letting all these people in willy-nilly and just saying, oh, yeah, you're probably going to end up in the States anyway, so who cares? You know, you're not going to stay here, so just go for it.
Well, that whole idea of making other countries pay for their stuff is, one, it's not uniquely Trump. If you remember after 9/11, Bush stood up and said, hey, we're going to go to war in Iraq, and Iraq's going to pay for it. A nice little smirk. And for those of anybody who listens to this podcast and understands the Iraqi dinar currency revaluation concept, and if you study history, so I have a degree in international finance, and so understanding currencies and international finance concepts, having countries pay for their own problems is pretty standard and has been standard since World War I. And there's a few different ways to do it, not least of which is tariffs and sanctions. So that's how Trump, when he says that, you know, Mexico is going to pay for the wall, he never had the illusion that they were going to write a check, at least not in a direct, like, this is for the wall. No, it's called tariffs. Right? And so if you watch Trump's tariff wars with China and Mexico and everyone else, that's what he means. In the form of Iraq, you're talking currency manipulation, crashing their currency, putting in sanctions, then printing the world's most advanced and expensive currency to date. And now the U.S. holds $4 trillion of it. And the idea that at some point that currency will be worth its pre-war values of $3.22 per dollar. And the idea that when at some point the Iraq war would pay for the entire U.S. national debt by turning a currency on, you know, turning the spigot back on, if you will, overnight. So having other countries pay for their problems it's been, Vietnam was paid for that way. World War II was paid for that way. You know, the German mark was crashed. And then Europe was rebuilt by revaluating the German mark. That's just how international finance and politics works. The problem is that Trump goes out there and says it in such a way that people are like, you're crazy. You're insane.
Well, it just sounds funny is all.
Right. And if you just explained it like, this is what I mean. We're going to do tariffs. We're going to manipulate the currency. We're going to do X, Y, and Z. suddenly it's like, oh no, that's how every president has done it for 100 years. Mm-hmm. But it just sounds crazy because it's Trump and his bravado is annoying.
I don't know. I was just like, yeah, okay. If we're going to get into another situation, I don't really think that we should pay for it, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, especially since it's, you know, we're talking about world supply of oil here. And, you know, everybody would be benefited by keeping it safe, if you will.
Right. Another interesting thing is the, so I spent some time via international finance. I spent some time in the trade and commodities world. And until recent technologies have unlocked oil shale, I remember back in college learning like the U.S. has more oil than any country, but it's all locked up in shale.
Yeah.
And so fracking has unlocked the U.S. oil reserves, and people are like, how does suddenly the U.S. say, you know, a net oil country and all this stuff? Well, it's because the technology has made it possible. And maybe we should do an episode on fracking and the dangers around fracking with groundwater, stuff like that. I'm not exactly sold that it's a good idea long term to unlock those oil reserves, but whatever. So it's oil and international finance and all of this stuff is, I think the average American is just kind of intentionally asleep at the wheel because it's just too much to think about.
Right?
Yeah.
There's too many things.
You know, it's like, oh my gosh, it's so overwhelming. I need to worry about how to, you know, get my kid to soccer practice.
Right.
And it's just
get food on the table, interact with your spouse, like
things in front of your face. And then you go to the gas tank and you're like, you know, go ahead, Jen.
This is annoying.
I think human nature has us focused on ourselves and our small little bubble. And so you don't think about those things until all of a sudden that soccer mom's like, how am I getting my kids to soccer practice when a gallon of gas is $5, and then all of a sudden it becomes a problem, but it's too late then. So
hey, they do it in LA. So
oh my word, yeah.
No, I mean,
I think one of the,
go ahead.
I think one of the things that our audience, the Epic audience, is going to be typically a bit more aware of the globalization of the world. I mean, it's just the idea that of nation states hunkering down and, you know, withdrawing from the world. And as a libertarian, it's like one of those really attractive, like, hey, we should just handle our own business and leave other countries be. Mm-hmm. At the same time, with technology and businesses crossing, you know, it's 100 years ago that the Industrial Revolution, you started having these companies like Ford and these different Westinghouse and all these, you know, big GM companies where they're building something in Europe and shipping it to the US, and they're building something in Japan and shipping it to England. And, mm-hmm. and that's just that international malaise of trade and business and everything like that. It doesn't matter if the country tries to shut down and handle its own business. The people inside the country are talking to each other. And so there's this reality of no matter how politically expedient it is to not meddle in other things, mm-hmm. there's just so many interests, whether it's business or education or you know, technology, finances, you can't unconnect the world from each other. Mm-hmm. And I think it's these things show up and you have all these different opinions. We should do this, 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 and this. Well, tell that to the business guy who's taking his monthly trip to Europe that we should withdraw from X, Y, and Z. Like there's a reality to the digital world and the digital age that this podcast is about, mm-hmm. that I think we have to have more intelligent conversations about. And for those soccer moms who listen to this podcast and yet are looking for how to raise your kids in a digital world that's to come, you need to start paying attention to what's going on in other countries, because it does matter and it's going to get even more and more important, in my opinion.
Definitely.
So my question here is why does it seem like we are so tied to the Saudis? So we seem to coddle them a little bit.
When you say coddle, you mean like not care about their human rights abuses or?
Yes. Like, you know, we kind of sweep that under the rug, you know, they're rich or whatever.
Well, I'm going to throw an assumption out there. It's the assumption I've operated under for so long. It's just that we were, you know, we needed oil. We were vastly dependent on oil. And so
yeah, that's what
if you're going to, well, if you're going to go to OPEC and say, you guys aren't doing things right and we need you to, you know, start playing by the same rules everyone else is, and be like, okay, well, your oil prices went up and oil price of oil was radically linked to our performance of our economy.
And well, so, how much,
I think there's much, a bigger thing though. Cause like, look at our culture in Washington, like that's how we operate. Like outside, like when we look internally, like the rich and the famous can get away with everything. And so we do that. We extend our business hand with other countries that like, you have something that I want of value. So we will turn a blind eye to the immoral things that you were doing.
Yeah. So that's what he just said, isn't it?
Oh, sorry. Dang it, I'm right. Carry on.
You're correct, I think.
I think you
should. This is what I live with all the time, getting told how I'm wrong. But
by saying you're right, you're welcome.
But no, I mean, you need to say it like this.
So, oh, okay, yeah. How much do we buy all of our oil from Saudi Arabia?
No, we're net exporters now. So, I mean, I which just means that
we put
out more than we take in.
Okay, so
why are we?
Do we have to mess with them now? That's, I mean, because
you,
we have partnerships,
agreements. Yeah, it's trade agreements. It's, if you ever heard of Henry Kissinger?
Yeah, some. But
and how the world's reserve currency is the dollar.
Yeah.
So that's largely the fact that the dollar is the strongest currency in the world, the most used currency in the world, traces back to OPEC, Saudi Arabia, oil, Henry Kissinger back in the 70s, taking the dollar off the gold standard, where the dollar became the gold standard. So you could argue that the reason the U.S. is the most economically powerful country in the world is because of OPEC and because of how we have made agreements with these other countries. Like, hey, you use only the dollar and we will buy from you. Uh-huh. And so now the fact that the U.S. is a net exporter, if you actually look at the numbers, we're still buying a lot from OPEC because of agreements. And so we're a net exporter and we could be energy independent. You've heard that phrase.
Uh-huh.
We're not because of political reasons.
Okay.
I see.
And so the political reasons keep the dollar as the world's reserve currency for a while.
What would happen if all those transactions for oil that take place in the dollar were now denominated in the euro, for example? What would happen to the US dollar?
It would crash.
Is
the, I mean, it's we don't realize other countries have to have dollars on hand so that they can buy oil and certain commodities because of these trade agreements. And if these countries did no longer needed to have dollars on hand, I mean, it's you're flooding the market with all these dollars that nobody needs, and then the value of each individual dollar goes way down. It's just supply and demand. Suddenly, your supply remains the same, and your demand drops through the floor. You have the world economy, the U.S. economy crashes first, and then because of who we are, the world economy crashes.
So is a euro tied to the dollar like the other currencies were, or is it independent?
It's independent. It floats. So most of the more advanced currencies float, but the dollar is still the lead dog for now. BRICS, so Brazil, Russia, India, China and South Africa, they've started the BRICS, World International Bank. They are trying to unseat the dollar as the world's reserve currency. I personally think that's a good idea because having the world's economy rest on the health of one country is not only is it morally unfair, but it's also globally stupid because if anything, you know, if the volcano in Wyoming goes up and half the U.S. suddenly disappears, like it's a vulnerability. Any sort of military-minded person or strategic-minded person would tell you, don't put the entire world's economy on one country with a 5% of the world's population. the U.S. is only 5% of the world's population. So OPEC, the U.S. dollar being the world reserve currency, how we deal with oil and energy, we don't, the average American doesn't understand that the reason America is what it is in many ways in our modern digital age, and the reason it has remained the top country for so many things, is because of these agreements about our currency and energy. And the moment a president stands up and says, we're going to become energy independent, mm-hmm. what they're really saying is I'm going to screw up the world's economy and crash everything. And the people vote for it because it feels good. But intellectually, and when you really dig down to it, it's like, no, that's actually a really dumb idea right now. We need to figure out a different solution. And it's not just about where we get our oil.
It's kind of funny because right as you were saying that, I'm thinking, and excuse the German, but the politicians just talk so much bullshit and everybody mm-hmm. eats it up.
Yep.
Because how long have we said, we're going to be energy independent, energy independence. We're not going to be tied to OPEC or Saudi Arabia anymore or whatever. And everyone yeah. was like, yeah, even, you know, both sides. Yeah, that sounds great. You know,
economically, the second half of that sentence is, and your money's going to be worth nothing. That's literally the truth of it. The truth of it is energy independence equals your bank account can't buy you jack.
So is there an end game on that as far as, you know, eventually those oil fields may kind of run into dry issues? Is there an exit strategy that you're aware of?
How long is the contract with OPEC? How long are we stuck with them?
I want to say it was a 100-year contract. But I'm not. I'm.
That's speaking. A really long time for a contract.
On top of that, like changes. It's. Well, you now you have, if you've heard of like Bretton Woods, the different agreements. I think they just had Bretton Woods 3. The original one was after World War II, kind of deciding that the U.S. dollar would be the world the gold standard. Now all these different agreements, international agreements for about how the world works financially. You know, Matt, you asked, "What is there an exit strategy?" There are people in the world who think there is no exit strategy, and at some point you should just prepare for the worst. And then there are others who are convinced that there is a group of very smart individuals working on what is known as the global currency reset. I'm hedging my bets on both, that they don't get the job done in time, they don't get everyone to the table in time, because a global currency reset requires 298 countries to agree on what each country's currency is worth and how the world works. The Bretton Woods 3 agreements tend to kind of move us in that direction, but it's, you know, there have been comments, you know, was it Mark Bloomberg from Bloomberg TV? I think his first name is Mark. You know, he's been on the news on the record saying, you know, there will be some Saturday morning, you will wake up. And you will be given the news that a global currency reset has taken place. Who was the IMF? The Christine Lagarde from the IMF a few years ago kind of alluded to negotiations about a global currency reset. So this isn't just conspiracy scuttlebutt. It is, it's in the news that, look, we know there's a problem. And 2008 really exposed the problem. And if you look at, you know, we have a series on the Epic Library from Mike Maloney on the hidden secrets of money. There, nobody could have guessed that the world leaders would essentially throw all monetary reality out the window with quantitative easing. And basically all the world has agreed to a pile of bullshit about finances and how things really work and who owes what, and to say basically, look, we're not going to call our debts on you. You don't call your debts on us. We have a massive problem. And until we figure out how to fix it, let's just kind of pretend like we don't have a problem.
Sure. Yeah. The number of countries operating with negative interest rates right now is
right.
Pretty wild. And then just last week, I mean, depending on when this episode airs, European Central Bank went ahead and kind of talked about their new quantitative easing program and lowering interest rates.
Right.
So how does that play into things?
And now Alan Greenspan is saying that the U.S. Treasury Reserve are going to go negative interest rates.
That's wild, right? Man.
That means that literally they're charging you. to borrow your money.
Well, that sounds like a great deal.
Right. It's just, it's getting stupid. And yet all the world is still going, okay, let's just do this. And it's like, we're taking it up the ass on purpose so that we don't all die. Well, and the basic premise is that debt is an illusion anyway. Money is an illusion anyway. Mm-hmm. And so if we can all agree on a new illusion, then we might be able to save ourselves. And so that's what the global currency reset is considered. And I'm hoping that because there are rumors, there are whispers in dark corners about how they're going to solve this problem, but it is global. It is very much centered around OPEC and the dollar and oil. And it affects, it's like a Lord of the Rings when the hobbits are talking to the Ents, you're part of this world. Like, yes, war affects us all. You know, this affects all of us. Mm-hmm. It's just easy to ignore it when it hasn't met your pocketbook in a very real way. And so the moment oil gets messed with, it starts to meet your pocketbook. And, that soccer mom that says, holy crap, why is gas $5 a gallon? So for those who are woke enough to kind of understand the digital age, where we're going, the age of Aquarius, the global, the unity of humanity, all these things that are coming forward, these are the growing pains. Mm-hmm. And growing pains can be super scary, but the more individuals who I kind of understand and don't give in to the hype and to the fear, I think the better. So we didn't plan on going into this in this episode, but I do have very much a lot of at least background in knowledge about global economy and currencies and how a lot of it supposedly works. But in 2008, they threw all those principles away. Mm-hmm. And you can see for now 11 years, it's like a fantasy. When you look at the stock market and you look at the currencies, and we're all living a fantasy right now, hoping that there's a group of smart people trying, with a solution on the way. And we'll see.
Good times. Should we talk about
Thailand
and tigers? Even more fun stuff. I'll take us to Thailand, where there is a temple. I'm not even pretend to pronounce it because you're gonna pretend.
What for long taboo? Oh,
there's two more words there. Anyways. So there is a temple, and it's kind of known as like
Shamalama Ding Dong.
A tourist.
Something Wong, we too low.
That's not it at all.
That was the Malaysian Airlines.
Right.
Guy.
Anyways.
Is that correct?
The name of
Did you say
actual,
Something Wong? Something
Wong. So this temple is known as a hotspot for having a lot of tigers. People can go and pet the tigers, take pictures with the tigers. It's all like this. It's why people go to this temple. Well, recently, a lot of the tigers have been kind of taken from the temple on reports that it was some kind of, illegal underground kind of tiger black market kind of thing. And so what's hitting the news, the headlines, is that depending on which article you read, the one that I have pulled up in front of me, they said they took 147 tigers and about 86 of the tigers have passed away. And so my little animal heartstrings got pulled. I'm just like, oh, those poor tigers. And then you read into it more and, kind of to make a buck, they did a lot of inbreeding of these tigers. So these tigers have like zero immunity. And so they get pulled out and all of a sudden they can't live outside of their natural habitat of being inbred and with these certain conditions. And just the different things that they were using the tigers for. And it kind of brings me to like the black market of using animal parts for different, medicine purposes or superstitions. Like if I have this tiger's tooth, I'm going to live a long and healthy life. Or, if I eat this liver, then I'm going to be cured of cancer. And all these different things that different countries think about when they think about this animal that represents this power and whatnot. And so I don't know where I was going with that other than I was enraged for these poor tigers. Like, save the tigers, but then it's like save the oil and save all the other things that are such a big, we can all get on our soapbox and fight for something. But in reality, I think it's that global reset. Like we talked about currency, it's really like how do we global set our priorities, and so that we're honoring all life, not just, you know, human lives or my neighbor's life, but animals and whatever else. So that's what got my attention with that.
Well, that does sound sucky, but I'm curious, like, it sounds like they were trying to help them and they ended up killing them. Is that correct?
Kind
of. So there wasn't, it was kind of like going to be a lose-lose situation, wasn't it? I mean, leave them there and it sucks. Take them out and apparently it sucks.
Yeah.
I guess shut them down and let all the tigers, I don't know.
I don't, yeah, it is kind of a lose-lose situation in that regard. But then it's also, I think it's a broader education piece of how different cultures or communities can get together and they create this microclimate. And then when you remove something from that microclimate, then all of a sudden it, what you thought was a reality is the opposite. And we see that, you know, in the U.S. with immunizations, whereas, you know, it's all those unimmunized children that are coming in and bringing in all these diseases. And, you know, these vaccinations are supposed to keep me safe, but it's really like, it's this intentional climate that we've created. And we brought something in that we were either unaware of, or, you know, on an energetic level weren't prepared for, or I want to say fight, but I don't know if that's the right word or not. But you know what I mean? Just there's, we, maybe not our viewers, but in a whole, in a global thing, I think we look at the physical as just face value when there's a wizard, there's a different layer to it, right? There's that intentionality with our thoughts and then with our beliefs, and how do we strike that, the match that gets it all going at the same time, not just the global currency, but how do we get the beliefs involved and, you know, saving those tigers that all have the same genes because they've been inbred for so long. Like, we can fix that.
Have you ever read the Celestine Prophecy?
Never heard of it.
So
I just heard that mentioned recently again. I don't know why.
Maybe some synchronicities. Maybe you should check it out.
I don't know. Maybe.
What's it called again?
The Celestine Prophecies.
Oh, it's Matt's going to write that down for me.
It's a fiction book. It's a fiction book by James Redfield, I think. We should put it in the show notes and put a link to it. Have you ever heard of The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho? So it's also a fiction book. But both of those books, they're very similar in the fact that they carry a lot of spiritual insight and kind of teaching in a story form. Mm-hmm. And so an allegorical form. So The Celestine Prophecies is a story of a guy who, you know, there's these ancient prophecies from thousands of years ago that have been discovered in Peru about what humanity is going to go through in this age. And, you know, there's 9 insights, you know, they call them insights. And the story is kind of how he follows intuition and follows life to meet people who know the next insight. Because it's the Peruvian government's trying to suppress it, and the Catholic Church in Peru is trying to suppress it because it's basically talking about humanity as a whole, and, you know, flies in the face of a lot of, you know, the exclusivity of religion, and kind of talks about how, you know, humanity and the rights, the divine right we have as humans, and stepping into the things that the New Age community largely believes in. And I would even say, you know, as the host of New Age Christianity, the stuff that I teach, it's, and I know a lot of us on the Epic, if not all of us on the Epic call, kind of agree with where humanity's going and how freely available God is, and the exclusivity that religion brings to it is dying. But in the Celestine Prophecies, the 9th insight starts to elaborate on how humanity is waking up to what we've done to the planet, mm-hmm. what we've done to the forests, what we've done to the animals, and how we're going to start voluntarily reducing our population. Voluntarily, like, hey, we still need wood for, you know, lumber for housing, but we also understand the power and the value of ancient forests, and how 500 years from now, there'll be very specific places where you go get lumber, and then there'll be very specific forests, and that everyone will be within a day's drive of a forest that's 500 years old. That kind of balance with, you know, there's so many of us, but we've learned how to interact with the world, the globe and nature in such a way as to be responsible and caring and value the animals and so on and so forth. I think it's a really cool, I don't know, a hopeful look at the future that I tend to agree with. I think humanity is waking up to what we're doing, what we've done. And I think these stories like, hey, let's help the tigers. Oh, shit. like we don't know how to help, but we want to. Definitely. And I think it's a good start.
Right.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I did you should my check part. It out, though. It's a good book.
Mm. Matt wrote it down for me, so I'll go to the library.
It's not like a movie, too, or something, is it?
There might be a documentary.
Actually, they did make a movie.
Yeah. It sounds like maybe.
They made a movie. They made a movie for it. I've never seen it, but I listened to the book on audio.
Mm-hmm. Good time.
It's not new. It's
quick aged. It was written like 90. Actually, when you consider how old it is, you're like, holy crap, this James Redfield is like, here's the bomb. Like, I think it was written in 94. So.
Right on.
Cool.
Well, I think probably our last topic for the day kind of goes back to finance, the world of finance and how the world is changing. GameStop is in what some might call phase 3 of shutting stores down and then radically changing what a GameStop store looks like. And maybe you don't care a single bit about the GameStop stores near you, but it's a little bit of the picture that's happening on a much broader spectrum. I mean, it wasn't too long ago that Toys R Us folded, and then, I saw a meme, it was before Toys R Us, it was Blockbuster, and just how the world is changing, how,
now Sears.
Brick and mortar stores are up against the wall right now. And, I learned about the GameStop saga from a YouTube user or producer, YouTube channel, Camelot331, and the guy used to work for GameStop, and he started out telling stories about what would happen when he used to work there, and now he went and did retail for another spot, but then eventually that spot found his videos, and then they let him go because they were like, don't do that to us. So he's got some great content up there, Camelot331. I think he's almost entirely supported by Patreons right now, but it's interesting to watch a store that I don't really go to a whole lot, but they're like in every major city. There's several of them, and there's like three or four of them in our town. And they're switching over to kind of take into the local gaming stores kind of business model, like gaming stores that might have like Dungeons and Dragons or Pokemon, or just like the places that where people come in into the store and then play games in the store with other people. They're going to try to take on that model. And Jennifer and I were talking about it just the other day. I was talking to her about it. She was putting up with me.
she was listening.
Right.
I listen well, guys. What are you talking about?
But just like how, one, GameStop's store closure rate seems to be accelerating. Like they weren't closing anything prior to the fiscal year. Now they're closing close to 200 stores prior to the fiscal year with, quote, a trench or many more to come after the fiscal year. They lost, $400 million last quarter.
Yikes.
They are hemorrhaging. And so their attempt to transition to the local gaming store model, to me, seems like a total Hail Mary. That's not going to work. And we're going to watch another store pillar here that's been around for quite a while just bite the dust. And I don't expect it to do well because those local stores, they've kind of got a culture going. They've got people that, an environment that people love and have been going to for years now. And for the corporate sellouts to come on and try to hop into that, unless they're able to like successfully make their own league or something.
Right.
I can't imagine them having any success in that arena.
On top of that, if you think about it, a lot of these GameStops were in malls, right?
Sure.
And I mean, the overhead's got to be astronomical. Because it's not cheap to have a store in a mall.
Oh, and malls are dying.
I was going to say, who goes to malls?
GameStops.
Right. I mean,
my 9-year-old daughter.
I went to a mall like once in the last 5 years, probably, or something crazy like that.
Yeah, I make my annual pilgrimage to, like, was it Bed and Body Works?
Bath and Body Works?
Yeah, that one.
Like one Christmas gift for the year.
Right.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, it's like in a digital age, the old models of brick and mortar are going to have to adapt or die. It's right. Things are mm-hmm. continuing to accelerate, and there's no need for me to go into a GameStop now and try to get, you know, where they try to upsell you 13 times at the register, when I can just go to Amazon, click, or even Walmart, click, you know, .coms. I mean,
if you think about, like, for example, on the Xbox platform, you can buy any game
sure
from their system.
Yeah.
Just, you know, purchase it and you download it, your hard drive, and you're done.
Yeah, I mean, I just exposed myself as a old fuddy-duddy who wants to go get a disc, you know, like.
Yeah.
Well, think about it. How many, you know, so I have both, you know, Xbox One and I have PlayStation 4. And you'll think about it like, okay, so how many games are you going to play at any one time?
Yeah.
Right? You don't jump from this game to that game to this game to that game. You're maybe playing maximum of 3 or 4 games at a time. And now, yeah, you just download it. And then if you don't want that game on your system because you want a new one, you just remove it. And then, but the Xbox system or the PlayStation system still knows that you own it. Mm-hmm. Right. So the ability, and on top of that, now your disc doesn't get scratched. It doesn't get broken. It doesn't get lost. You get your new system, and now you still have the ability to download your own games. It's that digital world and the... Not only that, the game companies don't have to print, you know, a plastic case with a nice metal. They just, you know, reproducing digital content is literally no cost at all.
Yeah.
You just copy and paste. So the digital world, I mean, we did a whole series in the beginning of this podcast, you know, blah, blah, blah in the digital age. Remember that we did, I think we did like six of them.
I think so.
I think this is, you know, the brick and mortar challenge that, you know, Amazon, you know, people used to yell at Walmart for coming into a town and putting mom and pop stores out. Mm-hmm. Now Walmart's yelling at Amazon. Right. Yeah. And I got news for you, Amazon. There's new ideas coming in the industry that you're going to start yelling at them, because the world doesn't want Jeff Bezos to have $150 billion.
It's true.
Right.
Well, I mean,
like it's not that we, you know, great. Capitalism has made Jeff Bezos the richest man in the world. Awesome. You know, just understand that the world is crying out for something more.
Mm-hmm. Did those bills get introduced in Congress to begin looking at the antitrust situation in big tech companies?
Did anyone notice how it just got super quiet in Washington, D.C. about that? Right? Antitrust. Crickets. Mm-hmm. But that's just... conspiracy theory for those who pay attention. No, actually, I don't really know where that's at.
I didn't know if it was last week or if it was this week that there were supposed to be a lot of them, a lot of probes initiated. Google was listed, Amazon was listed, I think Apple was listed, like all Facebook. These gigantic tech companies. Who?
Facebook was also listed, I believe.
Right? Yes. Just the idea that these people have too much power. And it's like, duh.
Like, here's... As a libertarian, for me, it's like, well, hey, if the market deems that... I like the fact that there's not 200 different operating systems for cell phones.
Sure.
Right? As somebody who's trying to build a couple different concepts to launch out to the world, I have a business associate who is a programmer who said, you know, the programming world spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to make programs that were web-based so that you didn't have to create operating system specific programs, you know, for Android and iOS and from Chrome and Firefox and Opera and all that stuff. Like for Windows and Apple, like you could just have very general systems that were web-based. And then that's when Apple made the decision to come out with the Apple Store, you know, the App Store. Originally, the original iPhone used the web browser to access all the apps that were available, right? And so all you needed was a browser that could handle whatever features, you know, a website that could technically access the camera on your phone if you're going to take pictures, or access the Bluetooth on your phone if you're going to stream, you know, connect Spotify with your car. And what happened was is that Apple decided, hey, we're going to make some money off of these apps and create an app store where you have to buy, and we're going to take 30% of all the stuff. Well, now you have progressive web apps, or PWAs, that have basically now reintroduced, we're going to work around the app stores, and all you have to do is go to our website, download an app to your phone, and it uses the browser to kind of essentially give you the illusion of an app. And so the basic premise is people want the convenience of user-friendliness. And I like the fact that there's not 200 different browsers, 200 different phone manufacturers. And so people want Google and Apple to have a monopoly because it's convenient. But then you look at somebody like Jeff Bezos, who's worth $150 billion, and you've got people starving, and they're like, but there's something wrong with that. Mm-hmm. And we instinctively know that it's a crime to humanity that so much wealth has been centered in the hands of the 1%. And what drives me nuts is the balance of, okay, so we know it's something wrong with it. Now let's use law and force to like manipulate and take over, versus why don't we just come up with a better idea? And I am happy to tell this audience that there is a better idea out there that we are working on. I don't know, it actually originated with Matt Rainey, who called me and said, hey, I have an idea. And then it kind of expanded, but the world is clamoring for something better. And I think we're just seeing all these evidences, and people are trying to stop the bleeding and without a fear, like, no, let's not close down GameStop. Look, if GameStop isn't what the market wants, mm-hmm. Let it close. A lot of people lose their jobs. There's a lot of pain, but there's something better around the corner. We just need, the market just needs to let it happen. I don't know.
There is also a little bit of nostalgia to some of those places that we grew up with, but yeah, I mean, that's not a reason to keep things around.
Right.
Like maybe one that people can visit, as like a
museum.
like the one Blockbuster that's left.
Right. Exactly. And that's like a
cool. Right. Have you seen their don't they have a Twitter account that's like hilarious? I don't know. The one Blockbuster that's left. There is one that's like literally cut, like, I think their Twitter account is like the last Blockbuster.
Yeah. I think it's in Oregon somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like it is.
Yeah, I think so.
Road trip.
I think it's in Bend, Oregon.
Bend. That's
Everybody's telling us to go there. We probably just need to make a trip.
Oh, well. Yep. Right. There you
go. Be kind, rewind.
Mm-hmm. That's
right. Do you guys still own any VHS?
I display them now. I feel like they're a prop on a shelf. That's about it. Because I don't have a VCR.
Mm. You have a little bit of home video or something or other, probably.
Yeah,
I'll keep it PG.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That we were.
Yeah, that kind of man.
We're not.
I don't even get it.
Somebody recorded over the basketball game. Oh my God.
We're not old enough to
stop
have that.
It, Mom.
Should we talk about our products?
Sure.
Okay.
On that note,
I have a product that I actually just recently purchased, and then I saw, I think it was on Instagram or something, where someone was like, buy a crystal, but don't research what its properties are for, and carry it around for a month and see, if you feel those things. And
oh, yeah.
So I was like, what a great experiment. And I was like, I could bring it on the show. And if anyone wants to do the experiment with me, awesome. So what I have here is, it's a black crystal. It's a black tourmaline. So I will link the description below. And if you want to research it before you purchase it, cool. But if you want to do an experiment with me, and we'll talk about it whenever is a good time.
It looks cool.
We'll do that. So we could be crystal buddies together. That's what you choose to do with your life.
Crystal buds. Sounds fun.
Sounds interesting.
It's a new hybrid between pot and crystal meth. I smell crystal buds.
So being here in the Pacific Northwest and doing lots of coaching, I have found my way into a, I don't want to say waterproof, but definitely a weather-resistant clipboard. I use the heck out of this thing. I know some people prefer the like the metal box clipboard, but with this thing and its clear cover, I can see my whatever lineup or depth chart I want to have up here. I can have plays in here. I can have my phone in here, so the time is visible. It expands quite a bit. I can keep my stuff in there. I keep my whistle that I hocked last month in here oftentimes, just like a so.
I was wondering what those weird foldy sides cover. Yeah,
and I had them folded in, you know, to make it look very notebooky, but also many times we'll have them out like so for our viewers. Just that way I can see the whole board, whatever it is. But yeah, super cool. About $20. I use the heck out of this thing as a coach. So.
Well, particularly where you're located, I imagine.
We're on the verge of the rainy season, so... It's I got my feet soaked today.
It's coming.
Oh, no.
Nice. Well, I am the book guy because that's what I do. So, with the NAC New Age Christianity podcast, I'm doing a series on the path to enlightenment, and I just did, we just did an episode last week. We recorded the episode on the DISC personality profiles and personality plus. So I've been doing some of that, but in addition to kind of filtering the enlightenment through the personality types, I'm also going to finish up with a few different tools that really any personality could benefit from. And this one is The Power of Decision by Raymond Charles Barker. He is one of the original he's one of the more prolific communicators of the New Thought movement, which was really popular in the early 1900s. It is my Kool-Aid of choice when it comes to spiritual thought and personal growth and how to create the life you want and live the fullness of the human experience. And The Power of Decision by Raymond Charles Barker is, he wrote a lot of stuff, but it's by far his most popular and best-selling book. And it is really freaking, really freaking good and clear on the power of making a decision. You don't realize all the ways in which you really haven't decided on something and you're kind of waiting for life to happen. And the creative capacity in humanity to say, you know what, I've decided this. And what happens when you do that? If you're kind of watching life be a malaise of blah, then the chances are that there's a lot of decisions you've just not made. You're just kind of waiting for them to happen. And this book will take a blah life and turn it into a very powerful forward moving life. It may, you make certain decisions, you can certainly introduce challenge to your life or even heartache or whatever. Like, it doesn't mean decisions make life easy, but it means it's intentional. So I think this audience is filled with people who would like to be more intentional. And The Power of Decision is, for me, a really, really shortcut way to introduce some intention to your life that you may be missing. So
awesome.
Cool. Okay. So we didn't have this prepared, but I just realized I have a headband on that I recommend. There's a bunch of, you can get cool sets on Amazon. They're like these exact same thing is $5 at Walmart, but on Amazon you can get 10 or maybe I've even got 12 for $10. Yeah, it was $12 nice. For $10. $12 for $10. So the quality is fine. Feels good. Everything's cool. It's the same thing as what's at Walmart. So I don't know if maybe China is just bypassing Walmart and sticking it right on Amazon or what's going on there, but works for me, I guess.
More than a product, I was going to talk about a search that I did on Amazon the other day. Mm-hmm. I had this little electronic device malfunction. And so I took it apart and tried to see what the deal was and realized that there was a little bit of water on a button. And I was like, man, I should get a soldering kit. Because it would be pretty easy to take that button off and replace it. I mean, the whole thing does not work because it's the on-off button. So it kind of sucks. Everything else looks fine. It's just that stupid button. So I went on Amazon and I looked at soldering kits. And they are so reasonable. And you don't just get the kit. You don't just get the soldering pencil thing. You get screwdrivers. All sorts of like the there's a like a little and it looks like a pen, but what it does is like when you heat up the solder, it sucks it out of the board, and they give you everything to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, they also give you a multimeter and everything. So really awesome. So and for $20, $25
Wow, dude. That's wild.
Multimeter, soldering kit, the stand. I mean, the whole nine yards. And for $20, come on, people. So I am going to put the link for the search, and you can see for yourself. And it'll still help us make some dinero for El Sombrero if you buy anything. But I think it's worth a shot to look at it and learn to solder some electronics. Mm.
In the digital age, for sure.
In the digital age, yes.
Dang, and to take that full circle, I think that price reflects China's monetary policy right there. Because, man, $20, that all that stuff. Like that, the multimeter used to be, I mean, I'm sure there's many multimeters that are like premium that are much more, but $20 wouldn't cover the multimeter.
Right.
Cool. Well, that's it for Mostly Monthly. You know, we'll have all those products on the website. If you want the links, hit them up. Help us out. Really appreciate it. Another way to do it is through our Patreon account. Be a patron. Hook us up. Keep this show rolling.
Hey, and just to break in there for just a second, if you do visit our Patreon account, there are some bloopers and or outtakes, whatever you want to call them, that you can see without paying. See what there is there. So go check it out.
Paid stuff is way better though,
right? I mean, there's definitely way more if you pay, but go and check it out at least to see if you want to, you know, toss us a dollar or two each month.
Or 10.
Yeah.
Each week there should be something.
Or a million.
$500
I mean, okay. A million is fine. We'll take a million.
I'll take
I mean, to be fair, you're not going to get any of my bloopers because I nail everything first take, but everybody else messes all it up. So check it out.
Go and check all of our bloopers.
Yeah.
And check out our social media too at Epic Ideas. Thanks for getting all the way here to the end of the episode.
To the good stuff.
That's not a blooper at all.
Okay, bye.